Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Activation Podcast. Today we're going to continue our conversation around solutions. What can we do for ourselves in these times of dealing with COVID-19, vaccine mandates? Now we're talking about lockdowns for the unvaccinated. There's a lot of different people I've spoken to over the last year and a half who are coming up with a variety of solutions for what we're facing and what we're facing in the coming years. And today's guest is one of those people who are really thinking about ideas for how we can approach this situation. And I think the most appropriate, maybe the most kind of tangible, real way to give people something they can hang on to. We're going to be speaking with Pam Popper, who is the co-founder of Make Americans Free Again. How are you doing, Ms. Popper?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you here. I've seen your name popping up over the last year with the work you've been doing and with Make Americans Free Again. And the audience will be familiar that I just spent the last 2 months traveling the United States doing my own speaking tour and connecting to a lot of folks who I think work with or follow your work, in particularly in Iowa and Ohio, and who are really excited about what you're doing. One of those was Lakin, who's a great volunteer who helped us make our tour stop happen, and also got me a copy of your book, COVID Operation, What Happened, Why It Happened, and What's Next. So we'll be talking about all of that. But before we do, for those who might not be familiar with your work, do you mind giving us a little bit of background and what led to the founding of the organizations you're involved with now?
Yeah, so I decided, it was a midlife career decision, to get involved in healthcare. And I found out that a lot of what I thought, you know, it's interesting how you can think you're a really smart person, you're well-informed, and then you find out that a lot of stuff you thought was true isn't true. And so long story short, I went to naturopathic medical school. I got a PhD in nutrition. And I opened a company called Wellness Forum Health. And the niche that we decided to focus on was informed medical decision-making. In other words, if you take a look at the way health is discussed, and it's maddeningly so with this COVID thing, he said, she said, this expert, that expert, here's an article, here's a different article, I read a book, you read a different book, let's go to this website says something different. And as long as that type of confusion is there, it keeps people from making good decisions and it gives bad actors a way to get away with things. And that's what's happening here now. So basically, we came up with a set of rules for evaluating the medical literature, things that I never had anybody in 27 years we've been in business take me on over. I mean, things like conflicts of interest. I mean, who would say that doesn't matter? Study design, the difference between correlation and a cause and effect relationship. And I won't go through all of them, but you get the idea, right? Things that everybody agrees on. And you analyze the medical literature and you come up with the conclusion. And then people can make their decisions based on facts instead of whoever's speaking the loudest or whoever claims to have the best credentials or whatever. So having done that, I also started writing a lot about healthcare and the shortcomings in healthcare. And I knew that this is not the first fake pandemic, by the way. There was one in the 1950s and the 1970s and in 2009. They've been doing this for a long time. They get away with it. They get away with a lot of other things, too. Some people have been watching my Wednesday videos where I've talked about some of the god-awful things that have happened in medicine that you just can't believe nobody gets punished over, right? So when this happened, I knew exactly what it was. I had done enough research to know what was going on. And I created a video on March 10th, which, and it wasn't, if you go watch it, it's not that I'm psychic. I just understood the plan. I also do some business in China. I knew that they had a vested interest in doing something like this. And I predicted that the mandatory vaccine was going to be the end game, which it certainly has been. So to a certain extent, I kind of feel like our company and me and my associates were made for this time. Like we've been preparing for 27 years for something like this. We had infrastructure and the resources to take on something like this. And that's why we started Make Americans Free Again. But what we're watching right now is not new. It's just a bigger version of what's wrong with medicine that's been going on for, I don't know, maybe 70, 80 years now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the fact that this isn't the first time we've seen these kinds of things. I'm glad you made that point there. And one of the reasons I appreciate that is because I'm glad to see so many different folks in the healthcare field and doctors of various types and people speaking up about the many concerns around COVID, because there's plenty of them. But I also think that sometimes maybe folks are still afraid to, for whatever reasons, professional reasons or personal reasons, to come out in the open and to acknowledge that, hey, we're not dealing with something new here. This has been going on prior. And there are, as you mentioned, plenty of other crimes that have happened in the medical industry and in government generally for decades and, you know, before this. And I think that's an important part for folks to recognize, because otherwise somebody might start questioning the COVID shots or questioning the masks in the schools or questioning these different things and assuming, well, these are just new problems that just happened now. These things didn't exist prior. But I don't know, it seems really important for me to recognize that, no, this is something that has been going on, because if you want to see real change, we have to kind of deal with the realities we're facing. So tell us a little bit more about, we have the Make Americans Free Again website pulled up for those who are going to be seeing the video. And I know you focus on litigation and lawsuits. Is that the main course of action that Make Americans Free focuses on?
It's one of them. And I'll tell you something interesting. So first of all, understanding that this has been going on for a long time gets people out of this idea that we're going to make it go away fast. Like if this actually just started last March, well, we could have made it go away last year, but it started 70 years ago. So that's a whole different situation, right? But to get to the part of Make Americans Free Again. So we did a lot of talking at my company about whether or not we wanted to take this on. And we had dealt with medical tyranny and worked with different organizations, got some things done. It's an interesting story sometime for another day, but we had been successful in solving some problems, largely unsuccessful, though I have to say the medical tyranny was going backwards more than forwards in terms of progress addressing it. And so when we started talking about it, my staff made one request, and it was not unreasonable, that we not do things that don't work. And that sounds like just common sense, but it is amazing how many people want to spend a lot of time on stuff that doesn't work. And so the stuff people have been doing for, you know, 60 years is protests. And protests are great, and they're social events. And I don't think people should stop protesting, but it's not going to solve our problem. All right. Look at the protesting that went on in Australia, and they're living in a police state. Look at the protesting that went on in Austria, and they're living in a worse police state. So protesting and declarations and petitions and all this stuff, it's busy work. And for the most part, our legislatures are useless, and and almost all, there are a couple of exceptions. Kristi Noem and Ron DeSantis would be a couple of exceptions, but most of the executive branch has declared themselves emperors and empresses and kings and queens. I mean, everybody should have been just chilled to the bone when Biden said last week, ignore the court and do what I say instead. I mean, you've got to be kidding. I've never heard a politician say something like that before now, but that's how emboldened the ruling class has become. So we have one branch of government that's still functioning, which is the courts. And people are justifiably worried about that because there are bad judges and bad courts, but there are also good courts, because look at that Fifth Circuit stay on the OSHA regulations. And so good court, right? So if you file enough cases and enough jurisdictions and that sort of thing, you're going to win some. And that's going to be our strategy. We also decided we'd be real, real strategic about the lawsuits that we filed. We would not be prolific. In other words, the volume wasn't the issue. Let's really think through a legal strategy. And so we started with challenging the emergency declaration. And we still have quite a few lawsuits pending that are challenging that. Because if we prove that these people committed fraud, and we know we're going to be able to prove it because there wasn't any pandemic, we know the test was fake, and I don't have to regurgitate all that here. But when we prove that they committed fraud, then we can go after their assets, and there's quite a good chance that they could get criminally prosecuted. But having said that, I started the meetings and gathering up people, because I thought if we have to raise $100 million to file these lawsuits, we better start gathering up big numbers of people. But when we had the very first meeting in my office, and it was apparent that something else was going on, like that first meeting, two people showed up in addition to employees of my company. And immediately people started making friends. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this when you travel around the country. People have lost their friends. The organizations that they belong to have gone away. They've had disputes with family members. They're not invited to their cousin's daughter's baptism because they're not vaccinated, all this kind of stuff, right? So this became the social event of the year, the Thursday meetings that we had. People started making new friends. They found new churches. They found new jobs. In fact, what we ended up inventing, we didn't really plan this, it just happened, is a parallel society. And during the worst of the lockdowns, the Make Americans Free Again people in every state were sort of insulated from all of it. I mean, we had a fundraiser with 400 people when the gathering limits were 10 here in Ohio. Everybody knew where to go to get your teeth cleaned without having your temperature taken, and no masks and all this sort of thing. So we had like this, and we still have this parallel society. And so what's happened is that this is the way we're all going to survive this for however long it goes on. The people help get their kids out of school and cooperate on homeschooling. I mean, I've hired 3 people. I'm getting ready to hire a 4th person from our group. Other people have hired from our group, homeschooling, healthcare workers. I mean, everything that you need to live a quote unquote normal life under these crazy, crazy times you can do with a Thursday group. So it's turned into much more than funding lawsuits. And it's good that we can do that because the litigation is really expensive, but we're doing a lot more than what I envisioned. Like I said, I take no credit. I just watched it happen and thought, this is really cool.
Yeah, that's so wonderful to hear. You know, the reason I think that maybe some folks have wanted us to connect is for that, for what you just said there, because a lot of my work focuses on and has focused on for years prior to COVID on the creation of parallel societies and parallel structures to compete with the ones that we have in front of us that I don't think serve the people, and that more and more people recognize, as you just outlined, you know, with from some of the courts being bad to the, you know, the presidential to the just government in general, not really respecting the will of the people. And it's something that we're seeing more and more with COVID around the world. And I myself, I'm involved with a movement, if you will, called the Freedom Cell Network. And our website's freedomcells.org. And we've been encouraging people for years to organize local decentralized groups. We focus on groups of 8, but really it's just about bringing people together ultimately. And we have a website that the only purpose that exists is not to be another social network, but just for people to create a profile, put what are your interests, what are your skills, what are you trying to learn, or you know, who you're trying to connect. And you put yourself on the map and you can go on. We have 2 maps, one that shows you where pre-existing cells or groups already are near you. And you can find, you can search 5, 10, 15, 20 miles, or you can search on the member map and find people who have joined near you. And when we just did this tour, it was very similar to what you were describing. People are saying, you know, we met through the Freedom Cell Network. Now we're buying land together. We're homeschooling our kids together. You know, we're growing food together. We're coming together. Or, and at the very least, we found each other and we don't feel alone anymore, right? Like you said, people who felt so isolated. So that's really awesome to hear. And I think that is, it's just so important right now because we do need to think, you know, I've heard that you've had some success with the lawsuits in Ohio, and I do want to talk about that. But I do think what you just said to me is even more important, like focusing on how are we going to make it through what's coming? Because you also acknowledge this isn't going to be gone tomorrow. It's going to be something we're going to be dealing with for years to come. And when you're seeing lockdowns of the unvaccinated, you're either going to be dependent on those systems and sucked into them, or you're going to create communities. And, you know, whether that means you're going and buying land together or you live in the suburbs of the city, but you have communities that network together. And, you know, as you said, the places to go get healthcare from without having to deal with that stuff. You know, the places you can go, maybe go find the local farmers markets, et cetera, the people that are going to support you and respect your individual choices. And that's so important right now. And I'm glad to hear that that's happening through your organization. And yeah, that's just beautiful.
Thing I want to add to that, and it's because you're doing the same thing. Think about this. The one thing that they did not want us to do, they went to great lengths to make sure we couldn't do it, is congregate. That tells you how important congregating is, because they knew that if we all started getting together in local groups and that sort of thing, that we would eventually be able to overtake them. And so that was, the whole system was set up for this to not happen. And one of the problems that they have right now, they had a lot of time to plan this, and parts of it were brilliant, but they really never counted on anything going wrong. And one of the things they didn't count on is that humans and humanity always finds a way to connect with other humans, you know? And so this was a development that has really upset their plans in a big, big way. To the place where they can lock down, they can do this, they can do that. And I'm not going to say it doesn't matter. It does. It's just the impact that they expected to have was a fraction of what they thought they were going to get, because we just weren't very cooperative after all. That's kind of fun to think about.
Hold that thought. Guys, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little bit about a project that I recently launched called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course. Now, some of you know that I released this book, The Holistic Self-Assessment, in April 2018. And essentially, this book is the culmination of the experiences I had when I went to prison, dealing with addiction, dealing with depression, and suicide attempts. This is the process that I took myself through to get to know who I am, to get to know my principles, to get to align my relationships, my words, my thoughts and actions with those principles. Overall, it's meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that can help you start accomplishing your goals by aligning your principles with your actions. The book is available to download for free, and I'll include that link below. But if you're interested, I did recently launch a new online course, which you can find on the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. I partnered with them recently, and they created this whole online course for me. It's 9 weeks long. You can watch and follow along and read the book as I go through each chapter. I read it with you, and I offer some tips and some exercises. There are two different options. You can either do DIY, where you just go through the 9-week course yourself, or if you want to have personal one-on-one sessions with me, there's also an option for that. So check that out, guys. I'll include both links below. Let's get back to the podcast.
Yeah, thankfully that there are more and more people not being cooperative. And you're right. Like I saw that while we were touring the country, just how important it is to have this face-to-face interaction, because that's the one thing that, you know, maybe they can try to censor us online, as I'm sure you've probably dealt with. Just like folks who follow my channel know that we were deleted off YouTube after 10 years last October for reporting facts that the World Health Organization doesn't agree with, right? And so when they can do that, they can try to say you lock down, go stay in your home and all this stuff, but they ultimately really can't stop people from connecting face to face, handing a flyer to somebody, handing, you know, a documentary to them or whatever it may be, or getting together for a potluck or for, you know, a gathering of some kind. Like those are just, it's so vital to what we're doing here. So I want to shift a little bit to talking about some of your successes with the lawsuits. You know, I am one person who, like you said, I think some of the things like petitions, protesting, they do have a purpose, they serve a purpose, but ultimately, as you said, well, Australia's still locked down. They're still enforcing these mandates. They're locking Austria down. They're locking Germany down. And even with hundreds of thousands of people protesting in the streets, it's not bringing an end to it, right? So despite the sort of maybe the motivation and the inspiration that comes from them, they're not really achieving our goal. And some folks would put lawsuits in that same category. And you yourself said there are sometimes problematic courts that we're dealing with, but you've actually had some success in this department in Ohio. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've had success in several places. And the first thing is there have been a lot of failed lawsuits. And I want to talk about that because I think this is important for people to actually understand the strategy. The first thing is that there are two things that in my world are difficult to contend with, and I deal with them every day. One is pants on fire, and I'm sure you deal with this too. People are, they're just really upset, running around, arms in the air, the injustice of it all, and I get that, but we have a very strategic enemy with unlimited resources, and we got to come down to the ground and really start thinking our way out of this, right? We have to be very strategic about what we do. The other one is hurry up and file. And now that the alternative media has become so big, there's an incentive for showboat attorneys to hurry up and file something. And everybody's all excited and they get their 15 minutes of internet fame when they file it. And then when it goes south a week later, you don't hear from that person anymore, but everybody goes, see, all these lawsuits fail. Well, we started looking at the failed lawsuits last summer before we filed anything. And we noticed that what people were doing is they weren't filing lawsuits that went to the core of the problem. In other words, what people would say in their lawsuit is, you're violating our constitutional rights. Well, they are. But the government had a great response. They come back and they say, oh, we know, we don't have any choice because it's an emergency. So we were the first people who filed a lawsuit in Ohio that challenged the emergency declaration. So there is no emergency. And we filed that case in several states and against the federal agencies involved in this also. Now, you don't always have to go to court to win. You can win when you file. And one of the ways that we won when we filed here in Ohio is that, and people don't know this, but we were the model state. We have some emails going back to early 2020 when Fauci was saying, make sure you tell DeWine about this and that sort of thing. And the reason I think we were the model state is that DeWine was at the time a popular conservative governor. He would certainly play well on Fox, but he'd also do well on the liberal media channels and that sort of thing. And so we were the first to do everything, first to lock down, first to cancel events, first to do masks, first to close schools, et cetera. Well, we knew, we had some very good intel. We get a lot of inside information. And if you've watched Tom Renz, for example, he has shared a lot of data that he's been given from people inside the Medicare system and that kind of thing, which is pretty frightening stuff, what he's shown us. But in any case, we had a date for the second lockdown. And sure enough, all over the country, Everybody was locked down again, second time. No lockdown here. Our little emperor instead put out some very weak, like he had a curfew, but it wasn't enforced. We actually sent people driving around Ohio trying to get arrested from the curfew. Couldn't get anybody arrested. Then he said he was going to really be buckled down on the mask mandate. And if businesses were caught with unmasked people two times, they would close them for 24 hours. We tried to get businesses closed for 24 hours. We couldn't get it done. So it was a lot of huffing and puffing. And for the most part, we lived pretty normally and didn't have a second lockdown. And I think the reason was he didn't want to deal with us in court by, with a judge that might say, well, maybe we should speed this thing up and take a look at what's really going on. So that's one lawsuit we filed, and it's still pending in several other states. We just filed one in New York against the vaccine passport, against Mayor de Blasio with the vaccine passport. We filed a mask lawsuit and a vaccine lawsuit in New York. Our attorney in Florida won a case against the city of Gainesville, which had mandated that all employees of the city either get vaccinated or they would be terminated, and he won. He's also the only person who's won a mask mandate in federal court. We have a lawsuit pending in Texas against Delta Airlines for their unbelievable treatment. I mean, if I told you the whole long story of what happened to these two women and at Delta Airlines, you just wonder what makes people become this crazy, right? So we filed against Delta Airlines, and we also filed against Baylor Medical for failing to deliver ivermectin as per ordered. And so we have a lot of different cases. It isn't just all emergency, and it isn't all Ohio. And we're getting ready to file quite a few others that we're working on. And one thing we're looking at very strongly is possibly wrongful death. We're getting reports all over the country from people. The story is always the same. Person in their 30s, 40s, 50s has minor breathing problems, shouldn't have ever been admitted to the hospital, but is, and dies in a week or two. And cut off from family, put on a COVID ward. Increasingly, people are sending texts saying they're not giving me any food or water. One here in Ohio that just happened last week, this guy was placed on morphine. What would possess anybody medically trained to put a person with breathing disorder on morphine? And they starved him. He went for 8 days without food, and he died in the hospital. And they wouldn't let his wife, who had medical power of attorney, take him out. So we're looking into potentially suing for wrongful death as well. So that's our litigation strategy. We're just going to keep hiring more lawyers and suing and finding more cases to file in different avenues. And we will be successful with some, not all. But one thing I'll add to this is that discovery is where you really get these people. And we don't need the discovery to happen 15 times. In other words, we don't need to depose Mr. Fauci in 12 different states. We just need him one time for about a week. And we don't need the CDC documents to be delivered to 14 locations. We need them in one place, and we'll share them with everybody. So when you file one lawsuit, you got to be 100% successful to get discovery. You file two, 50%. You file 100, you only have to be 1% successful. Well, you know, it's pretty easy to be 1% successful. So working the numbers game is part of our strategy, too.
Well, I appreciate you telling us all about the kind of litigation strategy there. And two things that came to mind, one being that, you know, when you're talking about how folks will file lawsuits and get their 15 minutes of fame or whatever, I definitely have seen that. You know, so I live in Mexico, but I'm originally from Houston, and Houston was one of the places where the Houston Methodist fired a bunch of nurses, and there was a lawsuit. And I definitely saw some folks afterwards, after the lawsuit was pretty quickly dismissed within like days, saying, well, this thing is written completely wrong. It's, you know, just the way it's filed wasn't appropriate. And so we just gave them an easy win to say, hey, look, this thing doesn't have any merits. And so I think that's an important point to make. I also appreciate your honesty that not all these lawsuits are going to be successful. And that's just, I think, a numbers game, right? That there's just how it's going to be. And that's important for people to acknowledge. And the other aspect, I know you said it's not all about the emergency declarations. And I think that's great. And I also think it's an important point of what we're facing, right? In Houston, when this first started, the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, who is connected to a lot of these same folks, he works for a Rockefeller Foundation funded organization, as well as being mayor of the city. Yeah. And he issued his, on the city level, you know, emergency powers kind of thing, saying like, oh, we have to declare an emergency. And he actually called for an and indefinite emergency powers. And he was granted this. There was only one city council member who voted and said, hey, what the heck are we doing? Why are we giving the mayor indefinite emergency powers in the name of something we don't, because this was like in, I want to say April of 2020. So we didn't, you know, they're like, he's like, we still don't know anything about what's going on. And we're going to just give this guy indefinite powers. And it's never been discussed again, as far as I can see. There was just that one kind of headline. Hey, one council member votes against it. The rest of them went along with it. And I just don't think enough people understand like the powers that were given to mayors and governors and obviously the federal government when this all happened. So I think that's definitely an important sort of attack point with everything we're facing right now. You know, I was also told about another avenue that you guys are working on, I believe. And this is something that I've been trying to focus on for the last month. And this is what was initially wanting me, you know, kind of called me to want to talk to you to see how we can collaborate on this. And this is the fact that people are losing jobs. People have already lost jobs across the country, across the world, really. And as we were traveling across the U.S., you know, I remember we were in Philly. We had an event, about 100 people there. And I asked the room, how many people here are at risk of losing their jobs in the coming weeks or have already lost their job? And well over half the room raised their hands. And that's pretty consistent, you know, different parts of the country, maybe not everywhere, but definitely even in places where people are like, oh, Florida, Texas, we're safe. People are still losing their jobs. People are still, you know, at risk of losing their income. And I've just really believe that right now there's such, there's nurses quitting, there's teachers quitting or being fired, and there's parents trying to homeschool and unschool their parents, I mean, their kids. How do we kind of bridge that gap and help people find work in ways that's going to be respectful to their decisions and, you know, and the way they want to live their life, and just generally help the Americans and people out there who need that sort of, that step to wherever they're going to go next. You know, a lot of people, as I'm sure you know, are having to consider career changes after doing something for most of their life, or educational changes and things like that. But I believe that's an area that you guys are also trying to help out with. And I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, there are a couple of ways that we're helping out with it. The first thing is, and this is why local is so important, because if I had four children and I'm now going to homeschool them and I have a job and I'm not going to lose my job, so I'm going to keep working, thank God, right? But I'm going to need some help with this. And so working with a group of families who take turns, you know, the kids can come with me today, they're with Michelle tomorrow, and they're with somebody else the next day. And we can pool our resources to hire a really good geometry teacher. And, you know, there are all kinds of things that you can do when it's local, local, local. Like it's not just local like Ohio or Central Ohio. It's local like Worthington, Ohio, the suburb that I live in, right? So I think the homeschooling thing is important. I've been telling people, get your children out of these schools because they're going to take your children away. One school system here in Ohio a few weeks ago sent a notice saying that all the kids K through 12 were going to be put on a bus and taken to an undisclosed location for the day where they would be fed lunch and then brought back to school as part of an emergency drill. Now, I don't know what kind of insane parent actually would send their child to school ever again after that notice, but apparently the school system's still open, which is kind of baffling to me. They are starting to take kids out of school and bus them to vaccine clinics. The vaccine clinics, I think there's 6,000 schools that have committed to have vaccine clinics. And many states have mature minor doctrines, which means that the children age 12 and older can decide to get vaccinated without their parents' permission. So this is terrifying, and you should get your kids out of school. One last thing I'll add is the CDC has this little notice on their website saying that children should go to school with extra medical supplies and other supplies in case they're separated from their parents. So they couldn't be more clear about their intentions. And remember, they locked up our old people in nursing homes. We didn't get to see our family members for how long? They got away with that. So what makes you think they're not going to do this to your kids? So the quickest way to fix the education system in our country, get all the kids out of school. When there's nobody to teach, they'll stop all this nonsense, right? In terms of jobs, the groups are a great place to find jobs. And again, you have to be part of a group and build a big group so that you've got that opportunity. What we're doing with healthcare workers is a little bit different. And I said before, I kind of felt like we were made for this time. We have a school, and we have been training healthcare workers to get out of the system and open independent practices for 15 years. And we're very effective at doing this and teaching them skills to operate a cash-based practice independent from medical institutions. So we have been, I do a free workshop on Monday nights at 9, a couple hours, where I talk about the system and why you need to get out of it and practice models and just a lot of free direction, Q&A, that kind of thing. And then we've just slashed the tuition prices as much as we can and keep the doors open because I have a lot of mouths to feed in my business. So I do have to take care of that. But, and then we're doing accelerated training programs to get people into practice sooner rather than later. And so this is going to be very exciting from my standpoint, because I think what the goal is to crash the healthcare system, and then the government would take over like they do banks and everything else they've destroyed in their infinite wisdom, right? But that only works if there's no alternative. And if you have a lot of principled and good doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners who go out on their own, start their own clinics, then that won't work very well, will it? Their takeover is all based on no alternative. But there's going to be a very robust market of independent practices. And we're excited. We have two doctors in our own Thursday group who we filled up. They can't take any more. So we have a third doctor who's starting his practice in December. And I don't think it'll take very long for him to be pretty busy. Everybody's waiting to, you know, sign up for him to be their doctor. So there's huge demand out there. People do not want to interact with the medical system for really, really good reasons.
That's so great. That's so important and so needed right now to help create these kinds of resources. And that's one of the things I'm going to continue to do. You know, we're trying to network and see what folks like yourself are doing and others, and, you know, what's the best place to send people, or should we create some sort of all-encompassing directory? And we've got a few ideas that we're going to be working on in the coming weeks. So I would love to stay in touch with you and your team and see how we can support that, because I think that is going to be crucial, not only showing people these alternatives, but for the people. Because I'll say this, like, as we're traveling and we're talking to people, hey, you need to get your kids out of the school for the same reasons you just mentioned. You need to start thinking about what happens if they say you can't come back and, you know, to work without this shot. Do you have a plan for how you're going to feed your family? Do you have anything in mind? You know, this is a conversation I've had with my own family. You know, I talked to my brother-in-law about this, and, you know, he's very aware of what's going on. But I think, like a lot of people, he's kind of paralyzed and just going about it like, okay, it's going to go away maybe or whatever. And for one, I'm like, it's not going to go away. Except that it's not just going to go away. But then I ask him, like, very honestly, like, how would you continue to take care of my sister and your three children if you come to work tomorrow and they say you can no longer work without the shot? You're telling me you don't want it. So what's your plan? And unfortunately, you know, his first response was, well, I guess I'll get it because I don't know what else to do. And so we started to brainstorm and talk about what are the options available to you? You know, how much money do you need to make, et cetera? Like, let's come up with a game plan. Don't just sort of sit by and wait for it to happen. And I think that's what's so crucial right now, is through the groups that you guys are creating, what we're trying to do, and so many other people are trying to just connect locally to get these resources into our communities. Because I do believe that all the resources we need already exist within our kind of collective communities. It's just about bringing those things together and helping everybody find them. So I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to me today. And I just wanted to make a note for those who want to check out what you guys are doing. I saw this Take Action page on Make Americans Free Again, and looks like there's some good resources here, handouts and some different ideas on helping businesses, and of course, learning about the COVID operation with your book. So I want to encourage everybody to check out makeamericansfreeagain.com, especially the Take Action page. Anything else you'd like to leave us with today?
I always like to end on a happy note, right? Because I think this is just so awful, and it is awful. I mean, I'm not some kind of Pollyanna, you know, try to ignore the bad part, but I think at the end of this, there's no excuse for what these people did, and we have to make them pay for it. But, you know, I'm 65 years old, and as long as I've been an adult, people talk about education reform and government reform and healthcare reform. I've never seen anything get reformed, right? Well, sometimes you have to blow it up to build it again. And I really think that this was a wake-up call for us to put our communities together, to reinvent healthcare, to reinvent education, to restore the closeness of humans, the fabric of our society. You know, look at how the Amish live. They were completely untouched by this. Nobody even bothered them. There were no masks. There were no vaccines. They just continued as normal. That's a model we need to emulate. And this is our chance to do it. And we'll protect ourselves against this ever happening again. And maybe in 10 or 15 years, we'll look back and say, it was dreadful. These people have to pay for what they did. but some very, very good things came out of it. And I think that positive spin on it is important because it keeps you going when you're just thinking, OMG, I just want to crawl under the blanket and wait for it to be over.
Yeah, that's so important. I do think that what we're going through is necessary ultimately to create a better, better healthcare system, better world in general. Thank you so much, Pam Popper, for joining us. Everybody, please do check out Make Americans Free Again. Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast. And as always, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.
Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. You can find the archives of our show on Spotify, Pinecast, Odyssey, Rockfin, and theconsciousresistance.com.